Hey, everybody, and welcome to another Playful Humans podcast. I'm your host, Mike Montague, and here at Playful Humans, we talk to people who play for a living. Our guest this week is Gary Ware. He is a keynote speaker and improvisational facilitator and all-around fun human. Check out his shirt. Very playful. You can find him at Breakthrough Play, breakthroughplay.com, and there's a personality quiz there as well, so take that playful personality quiz. And find Playful Humans and the Playful Humans community at playfulhumans.com. Join a whole bunch of other Playful Humans in the clubhouse. Here we go. Welcome to the podcast, Gary. We like to start with the joke of the week. The joke of the week is brought to you by clapping. Clapping, the only sane way to repeatedly hit yourself. Try clapping today. Do you have a joke for us?
I actually do. Would you love to hear a joke about construction, Mike?
Yes, I would.
Actually, I'm still working on it.
Still building it and putting pieces together. I like that. I think I got one similar. Do you know why the gardener? Do you know what the gardener does when she's scared?
No, what?
She wets her plants.
I love it.
Okay, there we go. A couple of jokes you can steal. Have fun with those this week. I recommend younger age demographics for our jokes of the week, but certainly you can get a laugh out of a four-year-old with that one. So enjoy. Tell us a little bit about what was life like pre-COVID and what are you doing now for play and playing for a living?
Yeah, so I call myself a creative catalyst in that I love to spark creativity in people, and how I personally love to play pre-pandemic was improvisation. Just like, if you are not familiar with improvisation, if you've seen the show Whose Line Is It Anyway, that is essentially what I did, you know, as many nights a week as I could. On a stage, we would get suggestions, we would make things up on the spot. It was awesome. It was a lot of fun. And that hobby turned into a profession. We can talk about that later. And then the pandemic happened and we couldn't gather in person anymore. So I had to resort to doing that via Zoom. It's not as entertaining or as fun to do, but, it is what it is. But also, I'm a dad to a 3 going on 30-year-old, and he keeps me busy a lot. And we play anything and everything. And it's usually I'm doing it wrong, and he's correcting me on what I should do right. So he's going to be a good manager one day.
Yeah, 3-year-olds like their own rules for the games, yeah. Especially creativity games and stuff too. So I'm sure that's fun. That's how I met you. I saw you running a workshop around company culture. And I think a lot of companies struggle these days with, how do we build the culture? How do we keep the team together while we're all working from home? And I thought your take to creativity was really cool and professional, because it's not just about being creative, but walking people into that. You started very simple with people and then got people out of their shells and built creativity over the time, which I thought for me was really refreshing. So many people try to just go out of the gates, or we're going to have to do this super fun thing, or try and go really big. But I could tell you were a pro by the way you also brought, you know, the science into it and the team building part, but brought us through a process. So you want to tell us a little bit about how you help teams and cultures have more fun?
Yeah. And the reason why I, you know, decided to go down this route of creativity and use that as, you know, creativity and play as the way that I help teams connect better is because, believe it or not, most people don't think that they're creative. There's a study that NASA did where they were following a cohort of kids from kindergarten all the way through high school. And they found that cohort at, you know, age 5, so kindergarten, 95% of them had genius levels of creativity. Mm-hmm. And so this test that they did was on divergent thinking. So they would give them prompts and they would say, how many different ways, you know, what can you do with that? And these kindergartners, again, had no filter. They were extremely creative. But here's the thing, about age 13, that same group of kids started decreasing in their levels of creativity. And by the time they were 18, only about 3% of them still had that high levels of creativity. And so you might be thinking, like, what's wrong with that? And it's, you know, anything that you would expect, puberty, you know, the fact that you might see someone that's a peer be able to do something that is incredibly creative, you know, or whatever. And you're like, oh, well, that's creativity. I'm not creative. And therefore that belief becomes your reality. But creativity is just problem solving. That's all creativity is. The other cool thing about creativity, it's not something that you're either born with or without it. It's a skill, and it's a skill that you can learn and get better at. And I find that if you work on creativity with people, one, they start to trust each other a bit more. You start to get that cohesion, and you're able to adapt in, you know, situations that are a little bit uncertain. I don't know, like a global pandemic. So,
right.
So that's my focus. And I bring play into it, because when we were younger, everything we learned was through play. And then as we got older, we sort of lost that, but we're still wired for play. You know, you know this, I'm speaking to the choir here, but I find that once I invite, you know, teams to play, you know, you really get a sense of their true nature, and you start to get that vulnerability, which leads to connection, which leads to belonging and trust.
Well, I definitely want to circle back to that teenage, you know, loss of play and why you think that happens, and really hear your story too, because I know both you and I worked in digital marketing and kind of went the computer route and circled back to play. So I want to hear about your story. But
yeah.
For companies, when people open up and they start playing and start experiencing more creativity, what are the benefits? Because I feel like we almost have to sell this to adults. That you shouldn't have to sell play. I mean, it's like the world's best drug. You're going to have fun. You feel better. You're more attractive. You're, you know, solving more problems and enjoying life. We shouldn't have to sell this, but I feel like we do. When you're talking with companies and corporations to bring you in, what are they looking for? What happens as a result of this?
So, you know, being in marketing, you probably heard this before. Give them what they ask for, or sell them what they ask for, and then give them what they need. So most companies, what they're actually, you know, what they're asking for is they want something that are going to help their employees work better. You know, they want to retain top talent. They want them to be more productive. They want them to be innovative. And, you know, so that, you know, because at the end of the day, they're a company. So in order for the company to keep going, they have to sell more widgets or whatever the case may be. And so they, you know, realize, like, well, you know, we have to train our employees. And the fact of the matter is, like you said, play. You know, play is that thing. However, because play is often seen as a frivolous activity, as something that, you know, is just goofing off or something that just kids do. When I was first starting at this, like, I had this sort of epiphany where I was like, oh my God, we're missing play. Like, hello. Like, it was like the Matrix. I felt like Neo, you know, 90s.
Me too. It's so crazy. Yeah.
Yeah. I like woke up and I was like, oh, I know Kung Fu. Like, it was one of those things where I thought, like, I saw in the code, I was like, that's what we're missing. We're missing play. And I was trying to, like, we need play. And people were like, no, we actually need to work more. And so I was like, all right, I had to rethink that, because I would literally, like, go to companies. I was like, yeah, I want to play with your employees. And they look at me like I was crazy. I was like, I want to bring recess to your team. And they were like, nope. And so I would start to, like, all right, what do we need to do? And then, so then I would say, all right, well, is employee retention important to you? Like, yeah. Is productivity important to you? Like, yeah. All right. I'm going to bring an experience. It's a little bit experiential, but at the end, trust me, your team is going to feel more connected, X, Y, and Z. And then I would go and I would lead these play shops and we would do these activities. And at the end of the day, people were like, wow, that was so great. I'm like, guess what? We just played.
Right.
Gotcha.
Yeah. All we did was play games for the last hour. Gotcha. But I do feel like the pandemic has opened this up a little bit. Now, maybe it's just in my world and I'm seeing more of this play around, which is entirely possible. But I feel like people are asking me now. They go, look, we know our people are depressed, like calls to hotlines and support support services and therapists are going up. Like, this is an issue where I think people are finally going, whoa, we do need to play. Like, we're not missing all the water cooler talk. We can't do happy hours. We're not doing our normal holiday parties. We need to do something to play. Do you feel like that's changing in our direction and more people are waking up? Or is it still, well, we need to make sure they don't quit or freak out. We don't want anybody to, you know, hurt themselves, but we don't necessarily pro play yet either.
Yeah, I think they are realizing something's missing because there's some recent studies because of the working from home, because of the pandemic, people are working up to 8 hours more a week than they had, you know, when they were going to the office, because again, you don't have a commute and all these other things. And so they're just like, need to work more. And again, the things that people are, that they sort of wrote off as, oh, frivolous stuff, you're not doing. You're right. You don't have that water cooler talk. You don't have that sort of spontaneous sort of connection with the coworker where, you know, you can just like sort of gab over, you know, a joke or something like that. You don't have that after work happy hour. You don't have any of that. And as a result, we're suffering. And you're right. There is so many, you know, increases in stress and all of these other things as a result of this isolation. You know, people are feeling like more lonely and detached than ever before. And we thought we had a problem when people were at work. They were feeling, you know, that. And now it's
right.
Amplified because of the pandemic. And so you're absolutely right. Companies are starting to scratch their head and they're like, well, we need to keep our employees happy. They're not realizing what was missing was play, but they're at least starting to come around to it.
Yeah, I've kind of felt that too. And then you made me think of another thing. We both have play personality quizzes. So you can go to playfulhumans.com/quiz, or you can go to breakthroughplay.com and find that personality quiz too. Take them both. They're free quizzes. And everybody loves a good personality quiz, right? Compare the results. So I was thinking so much of our play has been sucked out of society too. So even outside of work, all the organized play was canceled and stuff the last year, which is crazy because that's the last bastion of where most people were doing anything creative. Even like drink and draw places or escape rooms are closed. You're really sucking a lot of stuff out, especially with sports, of people's play. So for people that don't know or haven't seen ours, what are some different playful personalities, or how can people be playful during the pandemic?
This is one of the things. So I pulled this from Dr. Stuart Brown. He wrote this book on play about how it shapes right. our personality and whatnot. And he has these 7 play personalities. Before I even mention that, just like, you know, if you're listening and you're thinking like, yeah, like how I used to play before, you know, has been canceled for whatever reason. And I'm missing that. What I'd like to invite you to do is think about when you were younger, what were the things that you did that brought you joy? The things that you could do for hours on end. And as Dr. Stuart Brown calls it, taking a play history. Because this is the thing, we take it for granted because it was just so easy. It was just something that we did. And now we have a chance to sort of break it down and understand what it is, so that if we're in another situation like a global pandemic, we can start to realize like, yeah, I'm having this sort of withdrawal, this play deprivation. Let me adapt and figure out what the essence was and how can I do something similar, you know, reimagine what that is. And so, you know, most people, when they think of play, you're right, they think of organized sports, they think of a lot of social play. And just because it was just the easy thing, and it was, especially here in the U.S., is like what we're, you know, sort of known for. We're known for right. sports, we're known for like those sort of activities. But Dr. Stuart Brown, in his book, he says that the essence of these things can be in, you know, 7 different personalities. You know, maybe you're like me and your form of play is goofing around. You know, you're the jokester type person. Like, you like to be, you know, the person making people laugh. You know, you like to be like the class clown. All right, great. That's one form of play. That's not the end all be all. But some people, their form of play might be collecting things. Maybe you, as a kid, maybe you collect, sports cards, or maybe you collect memorabilia. You know, if, you know, in thinking back and doing your play history, if, you know, those were the things that brought you joy that you could do just for hours at a time, what are, you know, other things, that you could do that are maybe similar? And I call it following your compass of joy, because again, joy, so happiness. So I want to make a distinction. Most people say, I want to be happy. Yeah, who doesn't? The thing with happy is usually conditional. I did this thing, it made me happy. Joy is more of a choice. Joy, like, for example, about 2-3 years ago, I said, you know what? I want to run a half marathon. I want to run a half marathon. I've, prior to that, barely ran 5Ks. But I'm like, you know what? That's a challenge I want to take on. And it was not easy. I would have some of these grueling races and grueling training sessions that were hard. And in the middle, I'm like thinking to myself, what did I get myself into? But at the end, I felt this immense amount of joy. So again, joy is one of those emotions that is not conditional. Joy is something that you can sort of turn on. And it takes, again, it takes some intention to have joy. And so that's, again, following the compass of joy is thinking like, what are the things that I, you know, love doing that, you know, I could do regardless? And, you know, how can I incorporate that, again, being intentional, into something? And it requires some creativity. So, you know, that is, again, sort of the distilled version of these play personalities. You know, some of the others, yeah. So I mentioned collector, I mentioned the jokester. You know, there is the competitor. That's one of them. You know, most people think of that when they think of play.
But there's also and body play and
right,
stuff.
Yeah. Exactly. So yeah, that's
jumping,
you know,
jumping jacks or whatever it is. Yeah.
Right.
That's,
yeah.
That's great. And a lot of those things I think can be done in the pandemic. We might just have to get a little more creative about how we do those, or think about, like you said, really what makes you happy that you don't need other people involved to organize it or anything. If you are somebody that enjoys the social part, you know, figure out a way to make that happen over Zoom or something too. But the other side of what you do is the creativity and improvisation. So you specialize really in improv and the creativity side. So, well, I guess a good place to start would be, what's the difference between play, you know, improv and creativity, or what are maybe the attributes of how you see those things differently?
So improv is an action. You know, we are improvising, we're making things up. Creativity, like, I feel like is like the output of our improvisation is something that is creative, because creativity is just solving a problem. And improv is one way to get to that. And what I like to say, in order to be creative, most people don't realize this, you need a prompt.
Right.
You need
constraints because of some kind.
Yeah, yeah, you need some sort of constraints. And again, having come from a marketing background, I've worked in so many different situations where people, and this is another sort of one of my pet peeves, is I feel like the thing that is keeping people from feeling like they're creative is that there are some people that use creative as a noun. Like, I am in the creative department, which is almost implying if you're not in the creative department, you're not creative. And I've worked with some of those people and they said, no, don't give me constraints. I need the freedom. I need all these things. And the science shows that actually it actually helps you be even more creative by taking things away. Again, think about it like this. Our current environment, the things that were taken away from us is meeting in person. You know, if we were to meet, we had to be at a certain distance. There was all these constraints that were placed on us. And I feel like the situation that we're in is dire. Like, you know, it's unprecedented. Like, I've heard those words time and time again. And there has been so much innovation in the last 12 months because of the constraints that were placed on us. People saw a problem, got creative, and tried things out. They experimented.
Mm-hmm. My friend and I were just texting each other pandemic pluses. There were a lot of good things that came out of this. And we happen to be using it sarcastically about somebody we didn't have to meet with this year. But but there is a ton of pluses that people are being more innovative. You know, change being sped up means good change and bad change sometimes. And I love that you said that about constraints, because I think that is a part that people miss. They don't realize that. I teach sales, right? If you try and sell everybody, you're going to sell nobody, because that's too many options for you. You can't decide or focus on who's right for you, and it just doesn't work. And so much of life happens that way, but we always tend to see the opportunity costs as humans. We tend to see what we can't have rather than what we can or the ways around it, which is really interesting. And I think that takes us to your history. I want to talk to you about that, because as we mentioned, you know, everybody's kind of playful as a kid. And then, you know, we get conscious of our bodies and our social status and everything else, and things start getting weird. And then I feel like there's also society pressure to like get a quote real job and go perform. What was it for you? You mentioned that epiphany. what was it like before that when you realized that something was wrong? How did you know? And then what caused you to start looking for that? How did you come up with that epiphany?
Yeah. In order for you to understand like the epiphany, let me just rewind back just a little bit. Like I said, I was always that goofball. I'm a kid of the 80s. So like back then, like ADHD like was a thing, but it wasn't really diagnosed. It would just go sit in the corner. Stop irritating the class. And so my dad, you know, as a way to sort of like give me blinders, give me constraints, he gave me challenges, which like awesome. So he said,
that's cool.
Look, I know you like to goof around. I know you like to play. I know you like to play your Nintendo and stuff like that. But here's the deal. First, you got to do your work. Then I'll let you play. And so for me, that was a challenge. Like, all right, cool. Get the work done. I get to play. Do my homework. Super Mario 3. Again, that was like the thing. It motivated me. It gave me direction. And that was like a program that was instilled in me. And then it worked until it didn't work. And it got me through college. And you're absolutely right. Like, it's all right, now you're done with college. Now you have to get a real job. And I found myself like, because there were these check marks of things that I needed to complete. I was like, all right, college, check. I got an adult job, check. All right, I guess I need to start saving money.
Have kid. Yeah,
check. Yeah, right. I need to start moving up this corporate ladder. And all the while, I had the program running in the back of my head. You can play when the work is done. You can play when the work is done. And as we all know, the work is never done. And so I thought this burnout thing was like a badge of honor. It's like, you would not believe it. I'm so burnt out right now because I've been working my butt off. You know how many hours I worked? I worked 12 hours. What? And so I found myself like honestly feeling broken. It was like I got the job that I aspired to be. I was a VP. I got there super quick. But yet I felt depleted. Like I was like, man, I felt like I always needed a vacation. And then when I went on a vacation, it took the first couple of days of the vacation just to like get back to normal. And then before I knew it, the vacation was over. And then I was back to work. And then by the time I was back to work, a few days in, I felt like I needed a vacation again, because my worldview, the lens that I was seeing the world was not that of a playground, you know, of everyone as playmates and, you know, yada, yada, yada. I saw the world as a proving ground. I needed to prove probably mostly to myself, if I was being honest, that I was worthy and whatnot. And it wasn't until I took an improv class. And so me taking the improv class, because I thought of everything as optimization. I need to optimize my public speaking. I need to optimize this. Someone told me, hey, Gary, if you want to get ahead in your career, take an improv class. It's going to help you with public speaking. I said, all right, I'm scared of this. I don't consider myself a comedian, but if it's going to help me get a promotion and stuff like that, I'm in. I took that improv class and it was like,
blew your mind.
It did, because for 2 hours. So this is the thing. Most people, when they think of like improv, this is why they don't take it, is because they think the moment you walk in, they're going to put you on a stage and they're going to say, be funny. And no, it's not like that. They are training you how, if you're in a situation when all you have is a suggestion, you can think on your feet. And so the games that we played, it reminded me of recess. And that first improv class, I remember like it was yesterday. For 2 hours, I was completely focused. For 2 hours, I was connecting with these 15 other strangers that I had never met before. And after the class, I felt like invigorated. I felt like, wow, that was awesome. And I didn't get drunk. Like, plus.
Yeah. That's a huge thing of it too. I mean, I feel like you could write my biography, or we could write each other's here, because I mean, that's almost the exact same story. And we mentioned we're almost the exact same age. And I think that's the other thing that happened to me one time is I felt that way really like happy and joyful for once without any type of, chemical stimulation. I was like, I used to feel like this all the time when I was a kid and I didn't have drugs or alcohol or anything else. Like, whoa, I want this all the time, because I used to have this all the time. And it really does change your world. So I got one more question, and then I want to play a game with you, because I think we've got to do that for sure.
We got to do that.
But who is your play role model? I heard one of my other friends say they wanted to be the Beyonce of something. And I thought, who would I want to be? And I think I landed on Terry Crews. I want to be the Terry Crews of what I do. Do you have a role model or somebody when you were a kid or now that you're like, man, and that person is playing and living life like I would want to play?
You know, it's so funny. I've never thought of it like that before until now. And the first thing that came to my head, this is so weird because I never thought of this, but I think it works. I want to be the Weird Al Yankovic. And hear me out.
of corporate training or of improv and
team right? building? Because Weird Al, he's very serious about the work that he does, but he does not take himself serious. Think about everything he does. He takes something that's very, like, you know, coveted, like, you know, these songs that we, you know, that we love, like Michael Jackson's, you know, Bad or Beat It or whatever. And he, like, makes a parody of it, and he makes it fun and light. And that, it just popped in my head right now. So that's,
I love it. That's a great answer. I really love Weird Al. I've seen him in concert a couple of times when I was in radio and stuff. And the longevity of his career too, right? He's definitely playing for a living. That's somebody that is doing what he loves. But like you said, at the same time, he takes the music very, very seriously. They work hard to put on good shows and to put out good songs and do justice. And I mean, the amount of different range he has to have to sing the different songs and speed. I mean, a very talented dude. So that's a great choice. I think that's an amazing choice. Okay, you ready to play a game? It always has to be a choice here. So play or walk away, Gary.
I will play.
Yes, I had a feeling that was happening. All right, we're spinning the wheel of games. See what you land on. And you got last word, first word, last word, first word. Improvisation game here where you say a sentence. The last word is the first word of my sentence. And we'll go back and forth and see how many we get. Would you like to start or would I?
You know what? I will, since you are the host, I will let you start.
Okay. I was going to eat a blueberry muffin.
Muffins are so delicious. Mike, I need one now.
Now I'm thinking about something else. Maybe spaghetti?
Spaghetti sticks and is also delicious.
Delicious is how I was described in high school. That was my nickname.
Names fit the person. I see you as delicious. And I was known as Dorky.
Dorky is also a very popular name to call somebody. I don't feel like it is very positive.
Positive is a frame of reference, is also a state of mind. One person's positivity is another person's negativity.
I think you nailed it. Big round of applause for Gary for playing the game. I can't do better than that. That's a great sentence to end on right there. So positivity for everybody. Thank you for playing again. If you would like to find Gary, go to breakthroughplay.com. I highly encourage it. Improvisational facilitation, keynote speeches. He is your man. If you'd like to find out more about Playful Humans and join our club of Playful Humans, people like Gary and I trying to have more fun in life, go to playfulhumans.com and join the clubhouse. And don't forget, subscribe to the podcast. Click subscribe. Give us a thumbs up. Nice comments. Always helpful. And if you can't be good at it. That's what I always say. Go out there and play.